Morning. And we always chat sport over the weekend, but we don't talk about sport results. We go deeper into sport and we try to get to the bones and the nitty gritty about what's happening in sport. Now, Carl Lewis is with us on the sprint this morning. A very good morning to you, Carl.
Good morning, Zane. Pleasure to be here, as usual.
Yes, and coffee afterwards, as usual. Carl, we've had a discussion about this before, and obviously the World Cup coming up this year, you know, I think in Japan, 2019, everybody looking forward to that. But there are some major restrictions when it comes to, you know, the men's football. But we touched on this where we are actually trying to put in a bid, now that we didn't get the AFCON, but we're putting in a bid for the Women's World Cup. And how fast the development on that, Carl?
Well, I spoke to Asafa in the week, and unfortunately, they are waiting for certain criteria from FIFA. So they can obviously pitch to government, because you need government backing in situations like these. So as it stands, we are very much interested. Russell Paul, the CEO, said that, you know, unfortunately we lost the AFCON, like you said, but I think their big focus from speaking to him is going to be getting this World Cup. They feel that is an achievable thing, but we are up against Australia. They're the only country to bid, to have a formal bid. And I think there are one or two Scandinavian countries that are pondering a bit.
Yeah.
So there will be competition.
That's nice. If we're looking at the Women's World Cup, how many teams are we looking at, and how big is it actually, you know, for us to consider having the Women's World Cup? And I think we shouldn't be nostalgic and emotional about the fact that, oh, you know, Banyana is doing well, and on the back of that we actually want to do that. So how many do we actually have, and exactly what are we looking at in terms of the Women's World Cup?
Well, there's 24 teams. So, you know, we're playing in France later. It's our first World Cup. I'm very excited for our women. They've just been sensational over the last 2 years. So they'll be one of 24 teams, at the World Cup. I think we're up against Germany, Spain, and China.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are in our group stage, which is, not the easiest. The Chinese are very good. The Spanish.
I was just going to say the Chinese are actually, and the Japanese also, incredible football players when
yes.
it comes to their women's teams.
Yes, yes. So it's going to be tough, but I must say I like Desiree Ellis's, thinking and approach to all of this. She's like, I don't want to go there and just make up numbers. You know, anything is possible. However, we need to be realistic. Our players need to be on an intense fitness regime. So those women were training over the festive season, Christmas, New Year, in training camps here in Cape Town, really working. Because remember, we only have about 8 or 9 players, professional players that are playing overseas. So the rest of the squad needs to reach that level. And when you go to the World Cup, remember, you're dealing with professional footballers throughout the squad. So their fitness levels and conditioning is so much better. So that is probably the biggest thing, is our conditioning. Can we last 90 minutes against 3 top quality sides and progress to the next stage? That's the biggest thing. We need to be able to run for 90 minutes.
And you think the team can do that if they sort of, you know, go to the Women's World Cup, if they start looking and training now? And I think it was a strategic move with Sona this week, where the president had Desiree Ellis there and she was waving to everybody in Parliament. And I think the president is latching onto that side to
exactly.
give recognition to the women's football team, to give recognition to women in the country, and to sort of just sort of elevate everything in terms of women in the country. And I think he's looking at that quite a strategic move, especially if we are going to be bidding for the Women's World Cup, to
yes.
say, listen, you know, we have them in Parliament and we are fully behind them.
I think you have nailed Cyril's strategy there. You know, Cyril's a very smart, suave gentleman. And like you said, he's latching on that. Banyana's on a high. He's latching on to that. But he's also acknowledging, which they deserve. They are literally breaking barriers year in, year out since Desiree Ellis took over. So they deserve the recognition. Thank goodness that Sasol have funded Banyana Banyana, and they can see tangible results with their money. Let's hope more corporate sponsors will get on board.
Let's turn it back again to home ground and bring it into the province itself. You know, let's chat a little bit about Western Province Rugby and what the stance is on Western Province Rugby at the moment. Mm. And then also the football with the whole development around Athlone Stadium, yeah, and the twist between them and the city of Cape Town. Yeah. And I don't know. I just don't feel that sometimes the city actually sits down with, you know, sits down and thinks these things through and really kind of like works, you know, you work through these things and work with parties around it and come up with a solution instead of everybody running to Facebook and everybody running to social media. And now it becomes a hype. And then afterwards, you cannot repair the damage. So what's happening on the rugby front? And then what's happening on the football front with Western Province?
Okay. Quick update on the rugby. So there is, I would say it's turmoil at Western Province Rugby. There's a power struggle between the Western Province Board, which is the professional arm of Western Province Rugby, and their struggle is with the executive, the elected officials, the president, and, you know, club members of Western Province Rugby, the club presidents. So there's a battle with Paul True in the middle, being used in this proxy war. So basically, Paul True, he did not enjoy the way he was being treated by the coaching staff, the likes of Robbie Fleck, Paul Feeney. But in Western Province defense, they did an external committee came in to sort out the situation and kind of give findings and recommendations, and they found there was no racism, and they didn't find any wrongdoing from Western Province side or Robbie Fleck side. So I need to specify that.
Yeah.
So they were planning an exit strategy for Paul True. Paul True is the defense coach of the Stormers. So he's part of Robbie Fleck's team. They were, so the professional arm was planning an exit strategy for him. However, now the executive committee, which is the president and elected officials, they want Paul True allegedly to stay in the union and even take over from Gert Smal's role as director of rugby. Now, I don't think there would be an issue with replacing Gert Smal, necessarily, but the fact is that it seems that the players have lost confidence in Paul True. So this whole Paul True incident is like, he's basically being used as a pawn in a political game, in a way, as the struggle between the amateur or elected officials and the professional arm of Western Province Rugby. Mm. So there's this whole internal battle and there's uncertainty, and the players are not enjoying this uncertainty. So they're unsettled as well.
I always feel that when you start centering arguments and centering the, you know, the sort of whole body, and you take the entire body and its policies and procedures and protocols, and you start centering that, a lot of that around one particular person, that there's always a hidden agenda from both sides. And I'm getting that feeling over here too.
Once again, Zane, you're a very perceptive man and you are spot on. I think that it seems from the outside that perhaps the executive or the amateur arm of Western Province, they want to maybe get more control over decision making. So usually the professional, the board would be making decisions on coaching, coaches like Paul True. That's the professional arm, the board's decision. Yeah. However, it seems that the executive committee, they are looking to maybe take us back a few years and wrestle some control that they lost from the early 90s or late 90s. So you spot on when you say there are hidden agendas at play here.
Yeah. And then, of course, you look at the whole football thing in terms of Athlone Stadium, where cars are parked outside, the guys are locked outside. And I'm wondering to myself also, to a certain degree, you know, whether this was just, okay, you need to move out tomorrow, or whether it was discussions that had taken place and these people just didn't see eye to eye and just didn't meet the deadline.
Okay, there's actually a lot going on in terms of Cape Town football and the city of Cape Town. So that issue that you're talking about, that's SAFA Cape Town, they were locked out, kicked out of their offices at Athlone Stadium. The city citing health and safety and business zoning. That's their reasoning. Which I'm not sure if it stands up, to be honest with you, but they did offer SAFA Cape Town new offices. I think Fayhi's Kraal was one of them and one other venue. So when I spoke to James Foss of the city, you must remember that, you know, the political turmoil of the DA, yeah, change of leadership in the city, mm-hmm, mayor, Stuart Diamond was in charge of the stadiums, assistant facilities manager. So he had a very good relationship with the clubs, Cape Town Football. He got Banyana Banyana here.
Yeah.
He got the Nedbank Cup here. So he was a very pro football man. Whereas the new guy, James Foss.
Foss, yes.
He's very, economics focused. So his portfolio is, economic opportunities and assets management. So I think he wants to make use of the city's.
But I think let's cut to the chase here, for instance. If he's offered them Fayhi's Kraal, is Fayhi's Kraal then, zoned for business? Because the reason that they said was this is not zoned for business, it doesn't comply with the city's regulation. So was there a discussion whereby they, you know, James Foss went to the, because I know James Foss and he's a very candid man and
yes,
he's done amazing work in the city. He's done
definitely
really some good stuff and, you know, the Voortrekker Road corridor and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So he doesn't strike me as the person who's going to say, listen, you get out or this and that.
Yeah.
He will sit down and engage with the stakeholders in this particular incident.
Mm-hmm.
And say, listen, let's sit down, you know, maybe we can get this thing zoned for business, you know, let's just go there temporarily,
yeah,
while we get this zoned for business and you can come back to the stadium.
So that you spot on about James Foss, you know, he's a candid man, very, excitable about his job, very driven, quite clearly, but he couldn't answer if it was going to be a permanent move or a temporary move. But this is the thing. SAFA Cape Town is not a registered business. They're an NPO. So they don't need to be, they're a not-for-profit business. So the zoning thing doesn't work out. But this is the new story that's coming out. I spoke to John Comitas, Cape Town City.
Yes.
So next week it's the three Cape Town clubs are hosting Nedbank Cup fixtures. So they had to scramble for venues. Cape Town City, they had to move their fixture to Friday night. They managed to secure the Cape Town Stadium. Cape Umoya, the NFD club, they're playing at Athlone Stadium. The Magic, a third-tier club, they're playing Kaizer Chiefs, the biggest game of their life, Zane. Kaizer Chiefs, do you know where they're playing?
Fayhi's Kraal.
No. Port Elizabeth, Nelson Mandela Bay Stadium, because there is no place to play. So this buys into the sentiment that the city doesn't really care about football, that football's the poor relative of all the other sports. And John Comitas, he understands that the city needs to take care of their coffers. They need to be thinking strategically about their assets. And as a logical man myself,
And we can't have Athlone Stadium, Fayhi's Kraal. There's a beautiful turf that I opened in Gansbaai that was donated, a beautiful football training turf out in Gansbaai area, and this white elephant that is standing around the corner. We can't have these just standing empty and burdening the taxpayer. We need,
yes,
to generate income out of it.
And I mean, the whole generating incomes, I think the city are really banking on getting rugby there. But this is the solution from John Comitas, the Cape Town City. They're training at Hartley Vale. So he's saying the city needs to, so we don't need to run into this problem. Give us the opportunity or the chance, get us through the paperwork, the red tape, and let us build our own stadium. And this can become a 10,000, 12,000 seater stadium. This can become the home of Cape Town football. NFD clubs can come play there if needed. ABC Motsepe sides can.
Yeah.
So that's his solution. But he says they can't be playing at Athlone Stadium. It's not conducive. The players hate the pitch. They're a top flight club. They have to play at Cape Town Stadium because there's no other place. It's a beautiful surface. They're a Premier League soccer side and they're the only Cape Town top flight team at the moment. And they just think that, you know, while they understand the city and they've engaged James Foss and he credited James Foss with, you know, open discussions, they do feel that they could think more of football. And what if Cape Town loses? Oh, you gave this example. Sorry, Zane. So many clubs have gone defunct here in Cape Town because there's not proper football support and structures. Milano, Santos, Hellenic. The list goes on. And he's saying other clubs will follow this route if we don't have a home.
And all of this despite the fact that we have some incredible football players in the Western Cape. We have some real fantastic talent over here that can sort of be exported overseas or can even be part of the Bafana Bafana team. Carl Lewis on the Sprinter this Sunday morning on the Early Breakfast Show. Carl, thank you so much. I promised you coffee. I'm going to get that for you right now.
Thank you, Zane.